Good morning. Every third year, our lectionary prescribes that right about now, right about in the middle of the summer, we spend five Sundays in a row in John's Gospel, contemplating Jesus' words, that is, Jesus' discourse on the bread of life. Well, this is the year, and here we are in the second Sunday of this story cycle. Last week, we heard how it all begins. It starts off simply enough, or miraculously enough, with Jesus feeding 5,000 people with five barley loaves and two fish. And the first thing that happens in this story is that Jesus recognizes and then does something about people's physical hunger. And this should come as no surprise, because this is something that we already know. We know it about Jesus, that was just the kind of guy he was. Again and again, he heals people and he feeds them. Their physical needs come first. If the people are hungry or sick, in his compassion, he tends to them always without question. Of worthiness, it's only a question of need. His two great commandments, love God and love your neighbor, they actually come later in John's story, before telling the people what they're supposed to do to live in love and live in the Spirit. He shows them. He feeds them. And these are the first steps that perhaps we can take toward our neighbors, doing everything in our power, to help them in their powerlessness or in their need. And Jesus demonstrates a wonderful example of walking the walk first and then talking the talk. First things first, this story tells us, make sure everybody has enough to eat. And I suppose if we take the two great commandments, love God and love your neighbor, as moral or ethical demands, then feeding, clothing, and housing the least fortunate among us is what we're called to do. We can act compassionately toward our neighbors because we feel obliged to, or we can help others in their need because it makes us feel good, or for any number of other reasons. But the reason we help and feed and heal is secondary. Jesus feeds first and then teaches later. In John's Gospel, of course, there's lots of talk and lots of explaining, but the action always comes first. Now here we are in this five-week cycle of the bread of life, and I don't know how we can possibly hear these teachings without hearing the story of how the Eucharist came to be, how communion came to be. As a side note, it's interesting that the Last Supper as we know it is not described in the book of John. We hear of the foot washing and the commandment to love one another, but no bread and no wine, no body, and no blood, except today. And here it is, in the feeding of the hungry and the teachings that follow us. This is where Jesus tells his friends about his body, the bread of heaven. And that's an alternate way of hearing about the sacrament. And here's an alternate way, perhaps, of thinking about loving our neighbors. These simple, costly, compassionate actions that we can take, if we choose to, are actually sacramental. They're the outward signs of an inward spiritual grace. And that's how our church, the Episcopal Church, describes what a sacrament is. It's in the prayer book. It's in the catechism. You could look it up. But here's what it says sacraments are. Sacraments are outward and visible signs of an inward and spiritual grace. Now, I think that we tend to think that the sacraments are really only things that happen in church when there's a priest around performing a rite. You know, we think of the Eucharist and of baptism in these terms, and it's true, they are sacraments. But I like to think of everything that Jesus said and did as demonstrations of sacramental living. In his death, in his life, and in his resurrection, he moved with such grace. Jesus embodied inward spiritual grace because he was truly one with God. And he wasn't afraid to say so either. We hear it in today's reading, and we will hear it over and over again in the next few weeks. He says, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Let's face it, this is an audacious claim. And he will make even weirder and more wonderful statements in the coming Sundays. He will say, "You've got to actually eat me if you want the grace that I'm promising you. Eat my body and drink my blood." Hence our communion, the central and most mysterious part of what we do every Sunday when we get together to worship. "You must eat my body and drink my blood." His friends, his followers, don't know what to make of this because it didn't make any sense to them. It even sounded a little blasphemous to them. That can wait for another sermon. I'm pointing it out today because I want to admit that some of the time, I don't know what to make of it either. But I do know that it's true, and that I've dedicated my life to doing my part in the celebration of the sacraments, as have Jimmy and Mary and Suzanne and Lynn and any number of people who have been ordained. You know, we've dedicated our lives to this, and you do too when you come forward to take communion. Now, today our story seems like it's moving into new territory, right? We're moving away from physical needs to spiritual needs, from feeding those who are hungry to feeding our souls. Or are we? Maybe so, but maybe not entirely. Because at least in this cycle of teachings, Jesus never stops using the language of the body when talking about his and our relationships with God. In this story, and I will say in this life, there is no separation between body and soul. It's not like on one hand I have a body and on the other hand I have a soul. We're embodied souls, spiritual dust, if you will. And Jesus knows this, and he knows how it works because he became one of us. He knows that we get hungry. So that's where he goes today in this reading, and that's where our story goes, and that's where I hope this sermon is going today, to this place of sacramental grace embodied by Jesus. It's a place where Jesus shines forth to us as more than just a real good guy who we should try to emulate, an example of how to live compassionate, loving lives. This teaching takes us to a new place where somehow he can become for us the way, the actual bread of life, the cup of salvation. This is a strange, mysterious place, this place of grace. It's a place that some of us feel very at home in. It's hard to describe, though, isn't it? But I think we know it when we feel it. Now, this sacramental place where we meet Jesus, God, the Spirit, and yes, where we meet one another, this enchanted world that we inhabit, it may seem all the stranger and all the harder to fully accept for those of us who live in this time when reason and science rule the world. How many of the people you know, in fact, how many of us in this church today find it really hard or nearly impossible to believe that God's grace is available to us? How hard is it to believe that there even is such a thing as God's grace? Or frankly, God for that matter. And what I'm saying is that if your rational mind tells you that all this talk about sacramental space is a bunch of hooey, well, you probably come by that honestly. You didn't come up with that decision on your own. The culture has had a hand in teaching you that. It takes faith to enter into the sacramental world. It takes faith, and I think it takes some courage too. And if you've been hurt by the church, or by the membership or the leaders of a church, it may be even harder for you to open yourself to God's grace. And if that is your experience, I am so sorry. Because that is not what Jesus intended. He wanted all people to be well and whole and fed. And that is what I want for you. And that is what the people of St. John's Church want for you. And I think that's what Jesus wants for you. Okay, so I feel like I've gotten a little abstract here today. But, you know, this Gospel of John and the Jesus that we encounter in it tend to be a little abstract and a little theological. But here's what I know. And it's the thought that I want to leave you all with today. Everyone I know is hungry. For most of us, of course, that means that it's been a couple hours since our last meal and we're thinking about what the next one is going to be. But that's not the kind of hunger that I'm talking about. Everyone I know has a hunger for something that will give them meaning, make them whole, set them free. Most of us can't quite describe what it is that is lacking in our already too busy lives, but we know that we're hungry. It's not just an idea. We feel it in our bodies. I think we're hungry because we've forgotten how to live sacramentally. We take the sacrament on Sundays. We'll be taking it here today as soon as I get done talking to you. We take the we participate in this sacrament on Sunday, and we participate in a great mystery, the body and blood of Christ. And that is a wonderful, holy experience. And it is only the beginning. The real way to live a sacramental life is to recognize that everywhere we go, everything we do, every person that we meet is full of inward spiritual grace. That we are connected to God and that we're connected to one another in ways that we can barely even understand, in ways that we struggle to articulate, and when we do find the words, they usually mostly miss the mark. But we keep trying to be outward and physical signs of inward and spiritual grace. And somehow, and I can't tell you how exactly, and I would be suspicious of anyone who has an easy explanation of how, but when we eat the bread and drink the wine, and when we actually put Jesus into our bodies in the faith that we're being nourished and changed, well, somehow we are being nourished and changed. We're fed in ways that make it possible to be Christ's body, Christ's hands and feet in the world. This world that is our home. This world where we are so badly needed. Amen.